This is Keeping the Faith on the Mormon Faircast. The Keeping the Faith series explores ways in which our faith can be challenged and ways in which we can overcome those challenges. In this episode, I interview a woman who grew up with a less active father and who later married a man who left the church. She discusses her experience with these family members and what she has done to retain her faith in the gospel. Welcome to the Mormon Faircast.
Hi.
One of the things that the church is known for is its emphasis on families. And one of the things that we try to do in the church is teach people how to cultivate and develop good, strong family relationships. And we teach about how families are forever and we're going to be together as a family forever. And so one of the most difficult things that a member of the church can confront is spiritual discord in a family, and where you have family members who are not all on the same page when it comes to the church. And so you've had some experiences growing up and as you're married that I think can help our listeners to have some insight into how to navigate some of those difficult situations. And of course, because these are difficult situations and private and personal, and there are a lot of different people involved here that maybe don't care to have everybody know their business, we're going to try to avoid naming names.
Right.
Why don't you start talking about your history early on growing up? You were born and raised a member of the church?
Yes, I was. I was the youngest of a family of six kids, and all of us were active in the church growing up, except for my dad. My mom was very strong, very faithful. She was always the primary president, Relief Society president, whatever, and always took us to church. And my dad, from as young as I can remember, and I think way before that, had been inactive. And so he would come occasionally for a few weeks at a time if a home teacher or a bishop talked to him and said, "Hey, we missed you at church, why don't you come?" He would come and speak at my brother's and my sister's missionary farewells, except for the youngest of the brothers that's a few years older than me, where he just woke up that morning and said, "No, I'm not going to come," even though he was listed on the program. So he would come occasionally, and he wasn't antagonistic toward the church, but he just wasn't coming. He was just busy. He had his own business and felt like he needed to be there on Sundays, and would use that as a reason for not coming, even though quite often he didn't end up going to work at all. He'd just be at home while we were gone to church. But
do you know if there are any other reasons that he may have had for not being fully active in the church? You know, was there a word of wisdom issue, or
no,
was there any kind of doctrinal issue where he felt antagonistic toward the church? Anything like that?
I don't know of anything else like that. You know, he's in the last few years, he's asked me questions because he's elderly now and facing impending death. You know, he's in his late 80s, and my mother passed away fairly recently, and so he'll ask me doctrinal questions kind of as a, you know, because he was inactive for many, many years. But I don't think he ever had a problem with something like that. If he did, he never ever mentioned it to me or to us as kids, and he never discouraged us from going. He drove me to seminary for a few years and would wait in the parking lot of the church for 45 minutes while I was inside the seminary building so that he could take me over to the school afterwards. So he was leaving home at 6:15 in the morning, 5 days a week, to go and sit in a parking lot, you know. And he would always go to our daddy-daughter things, our the debutante ball where we came with our fathers. Anything like that, he was always supportive. He always was supportive of anything we were involved in, and he would come to watch our road shows and performances or whatnot. But he just wasn't attending church. And I know he wasn't paying tithing, because my mom mentioned that. But
what about in the house? What kind of religious practices would take place? Were there prayers? Were there scripture reading? Was there family home evening? Anything like
that?
We
always had a prayer on the food, but it was a rote, I could quote it for you right now, I know it so well, just, a few sentences that was the canned prayer that we always said, and it was done. And so we always had a prayer on the food. We went through stages where we would have family home evening, and we would last for a few months at a time.
Did he participate?
He'd be involved. Oh, yeah. He'd be involved. He'd take his turn and do the things.
So would he teach lessons?
Oh, did he teach lessons? I don't remember him teaching it, but I don't remember him doing it. But we had a chart where, you know, you just kind of moved your markers along on which role you played, whether you were making refreshments or giving the opening prayer or whatever. And he participated, but I don't remember him giving lessons. How interesting.
To a large degree, he was about as active as most people, but except for he didn't go to church and didn't pay tithing.
Kind of. Yeah. But he wasn't, you know, he was never resentful of us going. He never discouraged us from going. And like I say, we would have home evening for a few months in a row, and then it would fade out because, you know, the kids were acting like kids at family home evening and doing whatever, and it would get to be too hard. We always had home teachers that would always pretty much came.
Do you know if he ever did home teaching during this period?
I don't think he did.
Okay.
I don't remember him ever doing it. We always, for the many, many years, we would have the missionaries over for dinner on the third Sunday of every month, and she always invited the whole zone. I think the least number we ever had was six or so, and quite often we'd have 12 or 14 of them. And my mom would make this fancy, nice, gorgeous meal. And they live up a big hill, and so the missionaries that were on bicycles and couldn't fit in the car that one of the other ones would have, my dad would sometimes go pick them up and bring them up. And he was always very good about any of that kind of thing. You know, the missionaries needed a ride somewhere, he could help them. He was a good guy. He was a really good guy. He
and
just
so
wasn't doing church.
As you've thought about this, is there anything that you can put your finger on and say, well, this is why he wasn't going to church?
I just think it all goes back to the business. That's, you know, he was out of the habit of going.
What was his business?
He owned a wholesale nursery. He was a horticulturist. And so he had several acres of land that had a chain link fence, but it wasn't like it was super secure. And so he would worry that the kids would get in there and bother things and that sort of thing. And yet,
did that seem to you like just an excuse not to go, or was there a real need for him to be at the business?
It was an excuse. I mean, sometimes I'm sure he needed to be there because he worked hard. I mean, 7 days a week, you know, other than whenever he'd be home on Sunday. But he would tell us he needed to go to work because he, you know, I'm not going to go. We would ask him, hey, are you going to go to church with us? And he'd say, oh, no, I got to go to the nursery. And then we would go off to church, and on our way home, we would be discussing whether or not he would still be at home or not. And sometimes he'd be gone, but several times we'd come home and pass him on our way going home. And so we knew he had just barely left a minute or two before. Hmm. You know, and it's, you just say, okay, well, you know, agency. I mean, that's what he chose. And my mother was very good because she was not harassing him about it. She wasn't angry or upset. She was frustrated because that's what he was doing. He wasn't strong in the church. But she, like I say, she held a lot of callings that took a lot of time away from other things, and he never complained. He never gave her grief over it at all.
Yeah.
I had two brothers and a sister that went on missions, and I'm sure he paid for them, you know.
Yeah, it's interesting.
But he did not serve a mission himself, but he was in the Navy, and so he was not around to go on a mission.
Right. I think that often what happens is that somebody who just isn't coming to church has developed a habit of not coming to church. And it's easy enough to find things to fill your life with on Sunday if you're not going. And it can be hard to go back to church because there are certain cultural expectations that arise, and you have to kind of overcome those and maybe have to kind of swallow your pride a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are those kinds of barriers.
Well, and some people will be bothered if they go to church and people say, hey, we haven't seen you in so long, we're so glad you're back.
Right.
And other people will be offended if nobody says, hey, where have you been?
Right.
You know, so it's just, what are they looking for? Do you want to be acknowledged that you're there, or would you rather be able to just slip in and enjoy the meeting and have people get used to seeing you there again? It's really a catch-22.
Yeah, or, I mean, you know, do you enjoy the meeting? You know,
right.
I mean, I suppose that's an issue, too. You
right.
know, if you're,
right.
if you feel like, you know, I don't really enjoy going to church, and I'd much rather sit home and watch football or whatever.
You got to have enough reason to go.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, and so, I mean, there has to be a spiritual conversion.
Yes.
You know, where people have to feel like that this is where I should be. You know, I had a neighbor that moved in. I'm out mowing the lawn, and, you know, so I introduced myself to the new neighbor and get talking to him. I was the elders' quorum president at the time, and so I kind of felt like, all right, I need to know who's in, you know, the area and what, you know, what their needs are and what they want. So I struck up this conversation with him and started talking to him a little bit about church, and he made this comment to the effect that he was going to maybe take a little time off from church. And, you know, he wasn't sure if he was going to be going to this singles ward because he'd recently, you know, gotten divorced, or if he's going to be coming to our family ward. And I made a comment to him at the time to the effect that be careful not to let it become a habit, you know, that you're not going to church, because, you know, it's a really easy habit to make. And he seems to have taken that to heart, and he did come to church. So after he was coming to church for a little while, as the Elders Quorum president, I started to feel impressed that I should call him to be my Elders Quorum secretary. And so I called him over to my house. I had an interview with him, and I talked with him about extending this calling to him. And I told him that I felt strongly impressed that the Lord wanted him to serve as a secretary in the Elders Quorum. And he started crying. And he told me that he had just decided that he was going to stop going to church, because he said that there were these issues he had with the church. There were, you know, these kind of historical or doctrinal problems that he saw, and he didn't want to tell me about them because he had committed that he didn't want to lead anyone else out of the church, because these were such serious issues that if somebody else found out, that, you know, it would destroy their testimony. But the fact that he felt like God was aware of him, and that I guess he had the sense that God was working through me and extending this call to him, it was enough to kind of change his heart and make him feel like, okay, I'll keep going. And so later he bore his testimony to the ward about this kind of process he went through. And one of the comments he made was that when he decided that he was just going to keep going to church, that he had this feeling that this is right, this is where I should be, and this felt good to him. So it seems like that, you know, you've got to develop that kind of sense, at the very least. But you can't unless you're there, right? And so your father eventually came back to the church.
He did.
And so how did that happen?
Ah, okay. When I was getting ready to get married, my fiancé and I had talked a lot about how I wish my dad could be there for the wedding, and we were going to be getting married in the temple. And four of my brothers and sisters had already been married in the temple, and my dad had not been able to attend any of them because he wasn't active and he wasn't temple worthy. He wasn't going. And he was okay with that. I mean, it wasn't like it caused a big problem at the time, but still, I wanted him to be able to come to my wedding. And so my fiancé and I went in to talk to his bishop. We were both attending the singles ward. And we went in and talked to his bishop and said, hey, we really want him to be able to come to the wedding. You know, what would it take? And his bishop said, well, I've talked to him before, but I'll go talk to him again. And we said, great, please do it. And so he came over a night or two later and sat down in the living room with my dad and talked to him and said, hey, you know, your daughter and her fiancé are getting married in the temple here, and they really want you to be able to be there for it. And my dad was quiet for several seconds, and then he says, well, I guess it's about time. And that was that. He immediately started paying tithing, attending church, doing everything. He got a calling. He and my mom were serving together in several different callings over the next years. And he was there for our wedding. And it made, I don't know what the difference was, because, I mean, he'd already missed these other weddings. But for whatever reason, the timing was right. And it was good. And yeah. My mom worried for years after that my dad was still going to go inactive again.
Right?
Yeah, but he never did. He never did. And they served. They gave the they did the temple prep classes for many years for their ward, and they did getting the room ready for the children's baptisms in the stake. And for several years, they even had the missionaries living in their home. And so it's like he just, once he decided he was ready to be active and involved in the church, he never really backtracked. He just stayed involved, which is wonderful.
You know, so it seems like for some people that all it really takes is some kind of a life event, you know, a birth, a death, in your case, a marriage. And the important thing, I think, is that when that happens, there are people in the family and people in the ward who are ready to welcome that person into the ward and, you know, into that community, so that if they decide, well, now it's time, that they feel like there's people who will welcome them in.
Right, right. And he knew people in the ward, because a lot of the people in the ward had been around for as long as my parents had, and so it wasn't like it was all
people coming home teaching.
And we had people coming home teaching and coming to visit, and we had some good friends in the ward that we would get together with, you know, several times a year for family home evenings and things like that. So it wasn't like he was walking into a bunch of strange people. He knew some people.
Yeah.
You know,
and that, they made that seems like it's so important.
It seems like they made him a high priest right after he started coming back to church.
Yeah. And if that hadn't if that hadn't been there, you know, if there hadn't been people in the ward who were reaching out to him, that when he was ready to say, well, I guess now it's time, that it wouldn't have been time, you know.
Right. Well, and he you know, if he hadn't have been ready and if he hadn't have had that extra support in the ward, then perhaps he would have gotten active to come to the church, to the wedding, and then faded away again.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Which
so
could
I think
easily have happened.
I think that's really an important point, though, is to think about when we're trying to reach out to people who are not coming, that you hold out hope and you continue the friendship and the contact, and that at some point there may be some circumstance, a wedding, a birth, a death, something where they, you know, it kind of clicks. They think, yeah, I need to go back.
Right, right. Well, and the interesting thing is my mother grew up with her parents, and her dad was inactive for a long time. And I don't know the story behind that. I wish I did, but he had his own business also, so maybe that was it. I don't know. But I know that in later years, he came back and got active again, and they served a few missions together. He and my grandparents did. So she had grown up in the similar thing without an active dad, and then married a man who went inactive and was raising her kids by herself. And then I had my experience.
So the catalyst for bringing your father back into the church was that you brought a young man home that you were going to get married to.
Right.
Let's talk about that. How did you meet him? You know, what kind of relationship did you have with this man you were going to marry? What were your expectations for your marriage?
I met him in our young adult ward, and he was a nice guy. We got engaged probably way too soon, but it seemed right. And
he returned missionary?
He returned missionary, served a good, honorable, faithful mission, had a strong testimony, wrote in his journals all the time and shared a bunch of it with me. And I know, because I know he had a testimony because he'd written so much of it down. And he actually lived a ways away, and one of his mission presidents lived in my stake. And so he had come to visit that mission president and ended up staying in the area and coming to our ward. And so we got to know each other and got engaged fairly early on. But we didn't tell anybody right away because we'd hardly known each other, and so we decided to wait. And so when we told people that we were engaged, my parents seemed okay with it and didn't seem surprised at all. And that helped encourage me to go through it and think it was a good idea. And I loved him. I wanted to get married, of course. So that that seemed good. So we spent quite a bit of our engagement apart, though, several hundred miles apart, because he had gone back home to Canada to get his stuff from his apartment because he hadn't intended to stay down forever, and now he was going to be getting married. And so he ended up stuck up in Canada doing paperwork to be able to get married in the States. So he was doing that, and I was down here, and he came down and got back a couple of weeks before we got married. So we probably didn't get to know each other as well as we should have during the engagement, but at the time it all seemed good. And my mother told me later that she had had a distinct impression that I was going to be getting engaged, and I was still pretty young. And so I thought, oh, hey, Mom says it's okay, you know. Mm-hmm. So we got married. And soon, and at the time, he seemed to have a very strong testimony. And we had talked about the church, and we had read the scriptures together and things like that. But soon after we got married, I started seeing things that concerned me, red flags.
So you didn't see any red flags before then?
No, but like I say, we spent a lot of time apart. And, okay, you know, you're engaged and you're lovey-dovey and they can do no wrong.
How much time was there when, you know, between the time you met and the time that you actually got married?
8 months.
Okay. And
a little
much
less
of that time
months.
You were
and about,
separated.
About 5 months of that we were separated.
Wow, yeah. Okay. So really you had about 3 months or so to get to know each other.
Right. And there was some times in there where he was hesitant about getting married because I didn't have everything he wanted in a wife. like Did being able to play the piano. Oh, well, the classic one that he brought up over and over is the fact that I don't play the piano really well. I mean, I can play the piano enough to get by for some things, but as far as being able to play really well, he knew people that played really well, and he wished I played really well, and that bothered him. And so we almost broke off the engagement because of that sort of thing. And in retrospect, I don't know, is it really that important that you play the piano really, really well? Maybe. If it's that important to you, don't get engaged to me, you know? But if that's the one thing that's the problem, I mean, you got to figure out what the important things are.
Yeah. Well, so...
And my important things were to have a return missionary that had a strong testimony, good priesthood holder, those kinds of things.
Yeah.
And I thought I was getting those. I kind of was. We'll see.
Yeah. Well, right.
It looked like it.
It. Yeah. Yeah. And so you made this decision, and then you started seeing red flags.
After we got married. And the thing is, he was, he had not grown up in the church. He had joined the church when he was almost 19. So, and at this point, he was 26. So, you know, he'd been in the church a few years. He'd served a mission. He'd had good experiences in the church. But he didn't grow up in it, and he had one sister that had been in the church but had left the church, and so, and she's the reason that he had joined the church. But he was almost 19 when he joined the church, and so I was a little worried because he was a convert, and yet, in my mind, if you're a convert, you've probably had some kind of conversion process, something that makes you feel like this is the right choice.
Right.
Where if you grow up in the church, you may or may not have had that, you know. That sounds odd, but it's not like, I don't know, I have not seen God. I have not had a vision. I have not had anything really super strong happen to convert me in that way. But in my young, naive mind, if you're a convert, then something's happened where you really felt like this is the right church.
Yeah, do you know if he did have that kind of experience?
I don't know that he did. I think he felt like it was the right thing to do.
Well, in any event, he had some kind of experience that made him feel strongly enough to make a conscious choice to join up with this church rather than, you know, so many of us who are born in the church and maybe, you know, kind of drift along without getting
without having to come up with a testimony. Right.
Yeah,
right.
Okay.
And I mean, he was strong enough that he was working second and third shifts a day to be able to make the money, to be able to pay for his own mission, because that's what he thought you do, you know, and, mm-hmm. and I mean, that's great if you can pay for your own mission, but it's not the only option.
So what kind of red flags did you start to see?
The things that started happening were things like we would have a scripture study together, and instead of just reading the scriptures and discussing them and having them be uplifting things, it would turn into these discussions where we'd have all these questions about, well, how can this be right? How can this be fair? How is it possible that we're born here on this country, continent, and so many people around the world are born into really horrible circumstances like in Ethiopia? You know, all these children that are starving, how can that possibly be fair? And you know, just things that, you know, questions. We read a book about the history of the church, and that bothered him because there were some things that, I mean, this is back a few decades ago, and there was less information available, and it hadn't been written as well.
Do you remember the book was?
It was called The Story of the Latter-day Saints, a white book.
By Glenn Leonard.
Okay.
And so it was the, you know, that's not the kind of book that most of us would imagine is going to lead to a loss of testimony.
Right. And I don't think that did it. It just brought up a lot of questions for him. And I didn't have all the answers, and he didn't like my answers anyways. Because my answers were more along the lines of, I'm sure it's okay. I'm sure it'll work out. There's got to be reasons for it. We don't understand everything in this life, but someday after this, it'll make more sense. And I'm okay with things like that, and he wasn't.
Okay, so you had the kind of personality where you were, I guess, maybe more accepting of things and willing to, you know, let things roll off your back,
right.
and he would let things get to him, I guess.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Did you see yourself as being an inquisitive person, and were you really getting into church history or anything, or was it not that interesting to you and you weren't that into it? I mean, did you read the book yourself too?
Oh, we read it together.
Oh, okay.
We were reading it out loud to each other. I like stuff like that, and I love reading stuff about church history now even, but it wasn't like I was searching for questions, answers, I was more content. But when I could read stuff in the Ensign or in books or whatever, I would read it.
Mm-hmm.
But like you say, I was more content with things I was reading and finding, where he would use that as a reason to bring up questions that often didn't have answers.
Okay, so you're both reading the same stuff, and
at that point,
there are some of these things that you're both reading that are gnawing at him and you know, bugging him, and aren't really bugging you.
Right.
Okay.
And soon, right in around then, maybe a few years after that, is when he stopped paying tithing and started not going to church and things like that. And
did he say why he was stopping paying tithing?
Oh, because it was too hard. You know, if you make a lot of money, then it's not hard to pay tithing because you have a lot of money. If you only make a little money and you're struggling to feed your family, then obviously you shouldn't be expected to pay tithing because you only make a little bit of money.
Okay. And what about not going to church? What did he say about that?
He was still attending back then. He stopped going later. When he stopped going initially, it was because he needed to work, because he was a real estate broker and quite often would have open houses on Sunday. And he also wasn't happy at church eventually. I mean, this is, you know, several years later. But he was unhappy. And when he would go, he would spend the whole drive home complaining about priesthood meeting or complaining about the poor quality of the sacrament meeting talks or about people getting up in testimony meeting and not really bearing a testimony, you know. And he was so critical of what was going on at church that it was almost, I would almost avoid asking him about things about church because I didn't want the kids to hear him being so critical of the leaders. And I would like to have it be, oh, we had a good time at church and I learned this and I learned that. And instead it was turning into a real negative thing.
Yeah. So now he's, I guess, looking for things to criticize.
Yes, very much so. And I remember when I had six kids, I think, might have been less than that by that point. Anyways, I was the youngest of six kids, and my mom was taking us to church all those years. And I remember when I had about five or six kids, her coming over and me crying and saying, he's not going very often. It's really hard to take the kids to church. How can I do this? How can I take, I think it was five at the time, how can I take five kids to church by myself? And I had a little baby and toddlers, and it was just really, really hard. And her telling me, I did it. I took six kids to church. You can do this. And me saying, oh, okay, I guess I better do it then. You know, because by that point, he was not attending very often.
How long had you been married by this point?
About 6 years.
Okay. So it was 6 years into your marriage before he really started to
find reasons to not attend. Well, I mean, he was doing it off and on all along. But at that point, is I can mark mentally, you know, who was the baby and what he was doing other than coming to church with us. And
what about when you first started seeing red flags? How soon is your marriage
that?
That
was really soon after. That was like within the first few months.
Okay. So the first few months.
And by red flags, I mean, it wasn't like I was going, oh, no, I shouldn't be married.
He's
going
to leave the church, right?
He's going to leave the church. It was more a case of, oh, this is really uncomfortable. I wish I'd have known about this before because I don't like this. And it got to where we stopped reading together because I didn't like it.
You know, there's no point in reading.
I honestly can't. I think I might have, but, you know, it was the kind of thing where he felt like he had valid questions and it didn't make sense to him to not ask the questions. And yet for me, it was uncomfortable because why do we even need to ask the questions? This is just a matter of faith. You know, it's not that big a deal.
So. All right. So when you are, you know, reading the church history or when he's complaining about different issues that he's seeing and concerned about, were you aware of farms or, you know, any kinds of apologetic sources that you could go to?
I remember reading somewhere about farms that it existed. And
Maybe help us give context. Farms was founded in 1979. What year were you married?
82.
Okay.
So it had been around for a few years. And I vaguely remember seeing something about it either in a BYU magazine or Ensign or something, somewhere I remember seeing something about it and thinking that was really neat and it would be very interesting stuff. But at that point, I hadn't started college. I wasn't really into it. I didn't
feel like
it was
maybe a little inaccessible. You weren't living in Provo.
No.
And the internet didn't exist.
Right. So, I mean, I was appreciative of it and thought, oh, wow, that's exciting stuff. But it wasn't like I had good access to it.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. And so there weren't a lot of great sources to go to answer right. a lot of these questions that your husband was raising.
Right.
Did he talk to anyone else about these issues that he had?
I don't know. I think he may have, but I don't remember it. Because it was something that bothered him, but I don't remember it being where he would mention it to me that, hey, I talked to so-and-so about it. I don't know if he did or not.
Okay. So it wasn't something where he would go to a bishop or elders quorum president or something and say, I've got these questions, I don't understand.
No.
And so this went on for about 6 years.
Right. And in the meantime, you know, he and I would be talking and he'd be asking these questions. But in the meantime, he's a good home teacher and he's giving talks. He's volunteering to give talks in church and he's got his theories about how a testimony is like a wagon wheel with the spokes for all the different pieces of a testimony, and you just have to develop these. I mean, he had a lot of good ideas, but then the undercurrent was this, you know, how can this be right? How can this be fair?
Okay, so he kept on having these kind of nagging doubts uh-huh. that would come back. So,
but I don't know if they were formed enough in his mind to go asking questions about them, but they just existed.
Okay, so after about 6 years, he finally decided, I'm not going to keep going to church.
He was still coming off and on for several years because it wasn't until probably about 2001 or 2002 when he really stopped attending.
And that's about when he said, I'm not paying tithing anymore?
Oh, no. That was way back.
Oh. Yeah. That was back in the, you know, 6 years
into marriage. Yeah. Or earlier.
And his attendance started to become more spotty at about the same time.
Yes. And the negativity was growing.
Okay. And so what's the next phase in this development?
Okay, so he's not attending church very often at all. And when he goes, he's very negative. He's still friends with people from church because he had a lot of friends at church. And he would occasionally see them for things, but not very often. But he was real negative because we don't get together and have coffee together. We don't do anything other than help people pack and move. And
was he drinking coffee?
No. Well, back up. Yes, he was. No, he wasn't. But he was drinking Pero.
Oh, I see.
And drinking O'Doul's and things like that. That technically, you know.
Okay.
In fact, that really bothered me because he would have. In the end, he was bringing other things at the house, and it's like, I don't even want this stuff here, you know.
So at one point he was starting to violate the word of wisdom as well.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So initially it's, you know, I got these issues and these questions and, you know, how can this work out? And it kind of morphs into tithing's too expensive. It's too hard to pay.
And how is it fair
not attending church as much?
And of course, in there, he's not going to the temple because you have to buy your way into the temple by paying your tithing.
Oh yeah, so he's lost his temple recommend.
Yes, long time before.
Okay, so now he's not going to the temple, and you know, then you know, he's drinking the O'Doul's and the Pero, and I guess associating with people wanting to, you know, mentioned going to drink coffee.
Right.
And so is he associating with people who are drinking coffee drinking beer?
Oh, yeah. He had a lot of friends that were outside the church that he would get together, but that's more later in the story.
Okay.
We'll get there.
And so what happened next then in the development of this?
He was getting more and more unhappy with the church and finding more and more reasons to be critical of the church. And in about 2004, our teenage daughter was pregnant, and she decided that she was going to place the baby for adoption through LDS Family Services. She had decided that before I even knew she was pregnant, and so I didn't influence her, really. But in his mind, the church had stolen his grandchild, and it was just one more negative thing that the church had done. And by this point, he was starting to vent a lot more on the internet to people that had also left the church.
So by this time, he's on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
checking for people that have also left the church.
At what point did he start going on the internet for church information?
Oh, good question. Probably about 2005,
okay.
I would guess, somewhere along in there. The baby was born in 2004. He was already making lots of comments about how he, I mean, along with the church issues, there was always the marriage issues, because he was very, very, very critical of me and of the kids, and making a lot of verbal abuse, a lot of emotional abuse and things like that. And I was tolerating it because I didn't know how to make it stop, I guess.
What was the nature of the abuse?
Telling me that I was just one of the kids, that I had no value. I shouldn't have any right to help give my input on how to spend the money, because I'd never owned a business, because he owned a business. It wasn't doing well, but that was beside the point. And just a lot of, you know, I was useless. The kids are dragging him down. I was weighing him down. He couldn't wait to be rid of us. We were keeping him, holding him back.
Couldn't wait to get rid of him. Was he talking about leaving the family at this time?
Oh, yes. He was, well, somewhere along in there, 2004 or so, yes, we had come up to, actually, we had driven up to the Salt Lake area, and with the intention of finding a house to move the kids and I to, and he would stay in California.
Well, so at what point, how early in your relationship did he mention the possibility of divorce?
1993.
Wow.
We had six kids by then.
Uh-huh.
And he thought the house was too messy. And, you know, sometimes it would get messy, but we had six kids, too. And it wasn't that bad. It really wasn't. And he was talking about it back then.
What year did you get married?
82.
Okay.
And so 11 years.
Okay, so 11 years into it, he's
threatening. Yeah.
So did you consider that a real threat at that time, or was that just another sort of manipulative, you know, abusive complaint?
It was an abusive complaint, but from the standpoint that I knew he could never follow through on it, that he hated. He had grown up in a house that was abusive, and his parents had both been drinkers. His mother had died when he was really young. He was only about 10, 11. And his stepmother and his father would drink themselves to sleep every night, and were physically abusive to him, as was one of his brothers. And so he'd grown up with that. And he would never do anything to try and fix it, because obviously you have the gospel and you know that it existed, and so you can't really need to go to therapy or to Al-Anon or to anything like that, because that's weakness. And yet he had all these behaviors. And so as far as him going to court to actually file for divorce and pursue it, I didn't think he would, because he loved being in a family. It was kind of like a yin and yang pendulum type of thing. He would love having a family and having us all around, and let's do all these family pictures. And then he would get into a bad mood, and we're holding him back, and he doesn't want to introduce me to that part of his life with these other friends that he'd be with. And it was such a chaotic lifestyle. You'd never know when he was going to come home and be really upset and yell and scream and make holes in the walls and throw things around. And
so how did this affect your activity in the church and the activity of the children?
Okay.
In
2004, when our daughter had the baby, once we knew she was going to have a baby, I started going with her with LDS Family Services. The girls get counseling and also have their group sessions they can go to. And so I started going with her to those. And he wouldn't go with us, even though he was welcome to. And so he didn't have any psychological counseling at that point to help him through any of it. And he would not go to church with us. He had stopped going, maybe a year before is when he'd actually last was really going much. And that time, his excuse for not going is he was embarrassed because she was pregnant. And I remember at the time him telling me that, well, I'm not going to go to church. I'm embarrassed because she's pregnant. And we failed. You know, I'm thinking, what difference does it make? You haven't been going for several months now. You know, this is not something new. And yet he told me that at the time, well, I'm not going to go to church because that'd be embarrassing.
Yeah, so, I mean, he's got a reason now that he can say, well, this is why I'm not going.
Yes. Even though she told us it wasn't our fault, because she knew what she was doing and she thought she was, you know, not going to have a problem with that, and that there wasn't really anything we could have done or should have done differently. And yet in his mind, we had failed, and it was a black mark on us. But, you know, kids have agency. It all gets back to agency. And you look at Lehi and Zariah and their boys, and, you know, if you think you're a righteous person, you're never going to have problems with your kids. That's just crazy. That's unrealistic.
Well, what were you doing as a mother where you have a husband who his attendance at church is sporadic, he's not paying tithing? What are you doing to try to help your children to move forward in the gospel?
We kept going. I was taking the kids to church all the time, keeping them involved. I was the one driving them to seminary and youth activities and everything that we needed to do to be staying involved, keeping them involved in anything going on, road shows and scouting and all those sorts of things, because I felt like they needed it. And we had a lot of good people in our ward that helped them stay active and helped them have a good, strong priesthood holder example, because they needed to see that. And we had good home teachers that were still coming to see us, and he would, most of the time, nearer the end, he would just stay in the bedroom and not be out there with us. You know, even though he would know
when the home teachers were coming.
When the home teacher would come.
Okay.
Yeah. We stopped having the missionaries over because it wasn't worth it, because he'd have a big temper. We'd have the mission. Before that, we would have the missionaries over for breakfast on a Saturday or something and do this elaborate breakfast, because he loved doing that. But it got to where every time he would have for want of a better way to say it, he'd have a temper tantrum and go through the house screaming at us to clean up, and we'd have to do this massive clean up. When it wasn't really that bad, but it's, you know, the whole attitude of the house was different when he's in that mood, and it became not worth it.
And so what was the next step in this progression?
So he's upset at the church, and he's feeling like the church is manipulative and hidden its history and is a cult and is horrible and awful. And at that point, he wasn't keeping us from attending and being involved. But somewhere along in there, he took down any pictures of the church or the temple or anything that was religious at all. He canceled the church magazines, not that he was reading them, but he didn't want them coming in the house. He would get very upset if we were playing church music and he was home, or general conference. It couldn't be on if he was in the house. So it became where he was restricting us being able to do what we wanted to do, and he started complaining a lot about the kids' activities. You know, why do the kids have to go to seminary? You know, there's got to be something better. What are you going to have them do at 6:30 in the morning? Have you got a better idea? You know, is there something that they could be doing? And he would make these elaborate lists of all the things that we were involved in with the church, as if we were involved in them all the time. You know, he could add up how much time everything took, and he could make it so that every waking moment was church related, when obviously none of us do everything all the time. So because his mindset was the church is, it's a cult and it's too oppressive and it's using up all our, and I don't want the kids being raised in it. And I basically put my foot down and said, yes, they are still going to be raised in the church, because that's what we agreed to when we got married. And just because you don't have a testimony and you're ready to leave and later left, that doesn't mean that the deal's not changed. I'm not having my kids not growing up in the church just because you've changed your mind. And that didn't go over real well.
Now, it sounds like at some point he became involved in internet communities.
Yes, yes.
Tell me about that. How did he start getting involved in internet communities, and, you know, what kind of activities was he engaging in on the internet?
Okay. He was miserable. He felt like he was so alone and was the only person that had ever had questions about the church, and was having a really hard time with that. And somewhere or other, I heard about one of these online communities, and I said, hey, you know, what about this? Maybe there's people there you can talk to. And I was hoping it would be a supportive, you know, hey, yes, you're feeling unhappy about the church now, but look, it's not so bad, or something along those lines. I didn't expect that this site was going to be like it was. And it turns out that for whatever reason, this particular site's very antagonistic. They're bad. And he got involved with them and was involved for years. I actually started an account on there because I wanted to know what I was going to be facing later that day, because he would go on every day and spend a few hours talking with people. And then he would come home at night and tell me what they'd been talking about. And if I had a heads up by peeking ahead of time to see what the theme was, then at least I was had a little more armor on to know that, today we're talking about temple marriage and how it's dumb. Or, you know, today we're talking about tithing, or we're talking about, you know, whatever. And I didn't get involved in it really, other than seeing what was going on. But it was very frustrating to see how angry the people were and how they fueled each other's apostasies.
Yeah, and so it didn't help him to feel any better about anything.
He really thought it was going to help him feel better to leave the church and to, you know, help his integrity, because he didn't feel like the church was true. So I have to leave. I have to resign my membership because I have to leave.
I've got to be honest with myself.
Yes. Right. And, you know, there's no way I can stay involved when I have all these questions. This isn't right. And basically, I still remember us having this conversation in the bedroom and him saying, I just can't keep doing this because I know the church isn't true. And there's all these things wrong with it and I just can't do it. My integrity. And I said, you know what? It's agency. You choose. It's up to you. You know where I stand on it, but it's really your choice. Because as much as I would love to force people to do what I want them to do, that's Satan's plan. And so we have to allow people to make that choice. And you asked about the kids, and that's one thing that I was very clear with them about, is that it was his choice. And he was the one that chose to do the things that led up to him leaving the church. And he's the one that chose to leave instead of find another solution.
Now, did he check out any apologetic sites? Was he, you know, because he had all these questions. By this time, the internet is existing. By this time, the internet exists, and you've got a number of different sites, including FAIR. Mm-hmm. Did you ever talk to him about that?
He would ask me about, well, what about this and what about that? And he would print off pages and pages of information about Mountain Meadow Massacre or the Kinderhook plates or something, and say, you know, put them in front of me and say, well, but read this. This is going to change how you think. And I would read it and say, okay, so. And I would go to the FAIR site and get more FAIR information, so to speak. And to me, it makes perfect sense. And I can say, okay, I don't have a problem with whatever this issue is you brought up. And he would read it and say, oh, yeah, but they don't know anything. They're the, you know, you can't trust them because they're just there to defend the church.
Right.
They don't
they're
really
not,
know anything.
They're not giving
and
you the straight story. They're
that's
just defending
right.
it.
They're still hiding things. And nobody that's intelligent would be in the church. If you really knew what your church believed in, you wouldn't want to be in it. Nobody would still be in the church if they knew what the church believes in. You know, so he was showing me things and wanting me to follow his path. And yet he was so miserable. Why would I want to, you know?
Yeah, and so was there, I guess, sort of this time of recruiting where he's trying to say, look, you ought to leave the church. The kids shouldn't be participating. Let me, you know, convince you. Here are some things for you to read.
I think he would tell me that he wasn't trying to get me to leave because he knew it made me happy. And yet he wanted to give me information to justify why he was leaving. And he was concerned that the kids were getting brainwashed, you know, like obviously I had been. And yet we would see him and he was so unhappy that why would anybody want that? Mm-hmm. Why would you leave a good thing to investigate something where the people are all miserable anyways, mm-hmm. you know? Literally all the people on that site were angry and unhappy and it was awful. So I literally considered that he was an apostate, because they would talk on and on about how to tear the church down and how to destroy it and take glee in the idea that, is it City Creek? Is that the name of the new mall? Oh, that's going to destroy the church because it's going to cost so much money. And yay, you know. And I would see this and I'd say, this guy, if he had the power, he would get rid of it. You know, and to me that sounds like an apostate. It's just awful. And at the same time, I had adult children by then and they knew what was going on. And some of them would send me scriptures and say, hey, look, this is what Dad's doing. And, you know, we'd be talking about some of the awful things that some of the people in the scriptures did and see what he was doing and say, you know, how is
he
different?
So how did this affect your children ultimately? I mean, do you think, you know, looking at it now, and I don't want to jump to the end here too quickly, but I guess I'm wondering, do you think that his ranting you know, caused any
concern or discontent with them?
Apostasy.
Apostasy.
Did it lead any of your children out of the church?
The daughter that had the baby when she was 17, she got active again when the baby was expected and then stayed active for a few years, and now she's inactive.
Okay, but do you think that has anything to do with
your
husband?
But I don't. Okay. Because in her mind, and we've talked about this several times, in her mind, sometimes people need their church and their religion, and sometimes they don't. And right now, I don't need it, is how she puts it. And so I'm hopeful that eventually she'll come back.
Feel like she needs it again.
That's exactly right. And, you know, she and her boyfriend just had a new baby. So I've heard those kinds of events can make things different. And the boyfriend's a good guy. So, you know, in the long run, it may be fine.
But I don't think that's come from him. You know, you don't see the same kind of criticisms and anger and bitterness that you saw in your husband.
Not at all. Okay. And the kids look at him and they see how unhappy he's been since he left the church. And we've talked about it, the kids and I, you know, that he's not happy. And they've heard him make comments about how he was happier before when he was in the church. And my kids and I talk about our testimony, some of them we don't as much, but with several of them I do. And some of them have questions. Some of them should be reading the Fair Sight more. But I try not to, you know, get too involved in it with them for some of that. But I think in the long run, it's probably, they've seen his example, and I think they're not wanting to go down that road.
How did you find FAIR?
How did I find FAIR? I think I knew that FAIR existed before, but I don't think that I really was that interested just because I didn't have a need for it before. Yeah. And then as I was researching stuff, when he would ask me questions about these issues that were burning, you know, Joseph Smith was practicing polygamy, oh my goodness, you know, then I would go looking things up on my own and found FAIR and loved it. It's wonderful. I just soak that stuff up. And then somewhere along in there, I noticed that Michael Ashe's book, Shaken Faith Syndrome, and I bought it online. And in the comment box, I guess, on the order form, it asked for comments, and I commented there about my husband was in the process of leaving the church and told a little tiny bit of the story. And maybe 5 or 10 minutes later, I got an email from the president of FAIR saying, hey, tell me more about this. What's going on? And so we've become friends since then and email regularly. And talking to him helped a lot because I was able to bounce questions and concerns. Not that I was ready to leave the church at all, but sometimes I would say, okay, this is his issue now. What do you think? You know, and talking about things that I had learned in Mike's book, because there are so many things that have just really helped me in terms of seeing why my husband got off track and started not wanting to be involved with the church anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, for instance, the idea of the whether a prophet's perfect. Well, they're not, you know, and yet he's still in that camp that says, well, but he's a prophet, so why would he say something wrong? And so that kind of issue, and the idea of things, you know, historicity, where anachronisms and things like that, I mean, all those kinds of things that kind of, I don't know, clog up their thinking and get them sidetracked, rather than recognizing that things don't always have to be perfect. Mm-hmm. So for me, I started reading Shaken Faith Syndrome, soaking it up, loving it, enjoying it a whole lot, highlighting things all over the place, and making comments back and forth with the president of FAIR. And one of the big things is the idea about tradition versus gospel. If you go to more than one ward, you see that some things are done differently. You know, the young men pass the sacrament and sometimes they're dismissed before they sit down. Okay, does that mean that it's wrong? I mean, not necessarily. Or, you know, there's all sorts of, or for instance, my dad was baptized in the river in his swim trunks, and they weren't white. Well, does that mean he wasn't really baptized? Well, of course not, you know. And so things that sometimes people get caught up in and say, oh, this is, you know, you have to be in white to be baptized. Well, no, not necessarily, you know. And so the idea of tradition versus gospel has really been something that I've latched onto and gotten excited over as I see things. And so I quite often will email him and say, hey, look, here's another one, you know.
Yeah, so this is something your husband would get caught up in?
No, well, something
that he would note and say,
yes,
well.
Yes, sometimes. Well, not so much on the tradition idea, but for me that was a fascinating idea, the idea that the gospel really is just a few simple things, you know. We don't have to get worried about all these other things that are a part of the church, but
there are a few core things that are central to our salvation.
Yes, my husband was really bothered by the fact that, you know, our ward wasn't having road shows every year because we always had road shows growing up. Give me a break, you know, come on.
So what I see happening here is your husband is finding reasons to be upset. He's looking for things to criticize. And, I mean, it's hard to imagine somebody could stay in a relationship if it's with a wife or with a church if they're just always looking for things to be angry at.
Right, right.
And
things
so,
in the marriage to be angry at, and things at the house to be angry at with me, with the kids, things in the church to be angry at. He was a really angry guy. You could tell. You could be in a totally different part of the house, and when he would walk through the door, you could feel the mood in the house change, even though, you know, you didn't know he was home. You'd say, what's going on? And he would have just gotten home.
Mm-hmm.
You could just tell. And for a long time, I was making it work. You know, keep the peace. Don't do anything to ruffle his feathers. Don't say anything that's going to upset him. You learn the key topics that are going to set him off, and you just avoid him. And you know, whether they're church things, whether they're other things in the marriage. And I was finding a way to make it work because I didn't want to get divorced. I mean, that wasn't my goal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like.
And so at some point, you started considering whether or not it made sense to stay with him.
Right.
When was that?
But before that, so when my daughter was pregnant, I had gotten involved with a lot of people online to discuss adoption because that was the key thing we were, you know, that was really pertinent in our lives. And it really helped a lot to have other people to talk to, other birth mothers, birth grandmothers, people that knew how it feels to go through that. And somewhere along in there, I started looking for some kind of connection to a group that was going through something like I was going through with my husband, where he's basically inactive, basically left the church. He left in 2006.
And formally left. He resigned
his
membership.
He talked to the bishop. He wrote to Salt Lake. He said, let me out. Your church is a hoax. It's a cult. I don't want anything to do with it. Stop contacting me. Basically did everything he could to make sure he's off the records. And they were very good about taking care of that. Sometimes they'll talk online about how hard it is to leave the church, that they'll try and talk you out of it, and they'll leave you on the records but tell you you're off or whatever, and none of that happened with him. He was, as soon as he said, hey, I want out, they respected that, and he was off the records.
And not even that was enough to cause you to say, well, if you're resigning your membership, I'm resigning from this marriage.
No, because there's still hope, you know. This could still...
What was your
could
hope
come
at that
back.
Time?
Probably knowing that my dad had come back. Because my dad hadn't officially left. And the fact that we don't know what's going to happen after this life. You know, there's a lot of things we don't know. And he may have left the church, but he may come back. You know, and how was getting divorced going to make him better in terms of... It just didn't make sense to leave over that.
Okay.
And so I was looking for people to talk to that knew what it was like to have a spouse that was leaving the church and so bitter and mean and upset about it. And I ended up finding a group. Somebody referred me to it, actually, and just was mentioned it to somebody else. And I perked up my ears and took note of it and looked it up. And it's a wonderful website that is for people who are dedicated to the idea of an eternal marriage, even if their spouse is not a member of the church or is not an active member of the church. So we're going to make our marriage as good as it can be, even if we don't have religion in common. And so the benefit of that is they were people that had been where I was and where I'd been, and we could help each other. You know, when you're dealing with my child's going to be 8 in a couple of months, but there's no way her dad can do it, how do we decide who to have do it? How do we tell the family it's not going to be the dad? How do I convince him that it's okay to let the child get baptized? You know, I don't know, whatever your situation is.
What's the name of this website?
It's called Faces East.
Okay.
Okay.
And so this is a support community, I suppose, yes, for members, active, believing members of the church whose spouses have left the church.
Or have never been a member.
Oh, okay.
Or are just questioning and going inactive, but are not fully active.
Okay.
So where you're not equally yoked.
Okay.
Okay. And I mean, it's more than just, there's questions about doctrinal stuff. There's questions about just basic support in marriage and life types of things. And there's stuff that's just lighthearted and, hey, let's get to know each other kind of stuff. But it's a good place to discuss things that, oh, for instance, recently one of them said, hey, I heard about the session at the Fair Conference about women and their role in the church, and this is what they said. How do you feel about it? And I told my husband, and he said such and such. And I chimed in and said, hey, this is how I felt about that session. I was there, and this is what I felt, you know. And so it gave us a chance to discuss something, women in the church, which isn't really a hot button for men that are leaving. But some of the people on there are the husbands, and their wife is the one that's gone inactive. And in some cases, it's because they feel like it's not going the way they think it should, you know. So any topic at all is discussed there, and it's a very, very supportive community of people that can give you support, give you answers, give you help, give you direction, and encourage you to keep making things work.
So you found this website. You know, your husband's on the ex-Mormon,
yes,
website.
Right, same time.
And
they're polar opposites too, because his is so angry and bitter. And there's other sites in between the two. You know, there's sites for people that are not really sure how involved they want to be, and they're not real comfortable being totally, you know. So there's sites that are not angry and bitter, but this is the site. And a lot of the people on the Faces East site are involved at some extent on some of these other sites, or know some of the people, or their spouses are quite often. And so sometimes they're peeking in to see what's going on because they want to know what's up.
Okay, and so you're finding some support from this website, the Faces East site, and it's encouraging you to try to maintain...
Make it work.
Yeah, keep your marriage.
Yep.
And you're doing that for a number of years.
As long as I can.
Yeah, so he resigned his membership, did you say 2006?
Six, yes.
And so for a number of years, you're married to a man who is an ex-Mormon.
Mm-hmm.
And
he's beyond that. He's an apostate.
Okay.
He really is.
And actively fighting against,
yes,
the church.
Yes.
And your children are continuing to remain active in the,
right,
church.
Yep. Both the ones that are still living at home and the ones that have moved away.
Okay.
And some of them had gotten married in the temple, and that really bothered him.
How did your children react to your husband leaving?
He didn't tell them.
Wow.
He didn't tell them. And it was... a few years after I told them, because they needed to know, but it was a few years after that I found out from one of them that she was really bothered by the fact that he had not ever told her. And I hadn't told him that I'd told the kids. And at that point we weren't, you know, it wasn't like we were on the same page at all, but it bothered them, but they knew he'd been unhappy. And like I say, we talked about agency a lot. That was such a key thing to discuss at our house, because agency is everything. That's why we're here.
So, at some point, you decide
this marriage is not worth it. Well, and this is after a few years of going to church and crying with every families can be together forever, love at home, anything like that. That's all, you know, this is our ideal, is to have this loving family where mother and father sit together, and they're either sitting together holding hands with the kids on both sides, or they're at opposite ends of the bench with the kids corralled in the middle, you know, but they're there together and they're learning and growing and enjoying the experience. And I wasn't having that at all. And at the time, right along in there, early on in that process, I had been the primary president. So I was very busy doing that. And he was relatively supportive, but I was also very careful to not let it infringe on any time that he thought was his. So, but then I was teaching Relief Society, and I was doing the Teaching for Our Times, which is the fourth Sunday lessons based on the General Conference talks. And I loved that calling. That was fun. And occasionally there would be a talk that would be about the priesthood, or it would be about marriage. And I, as soon as I realized that was what our talk was going to be about, on probably, I don't know, two or three occasions when that was the talk, I would let my Relief Society counselor over teachers know that there is no way I could give that talk because it would just be too hard.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would find somewhere else to be that Sunday. I'd go to a different ward, or I'd go visit my parents with them, their ward or something. And the thing is, they were very understanding, and so it worked out fine. But, you know, it's hard to be in a church that values marriage and family and being on the same page and equally yoked and all of that when somebody in the family's chosen something else.
Thank you for listening to the Mormon Faircast. If there is an issue that you've been wondering about, you can often find the latest answers at the Fair Wiki, found at fairmormon.org. If you can't find your answer there, feel free to pose your question to the Fair Apologists by visiting the Fair contact page. Questions or comments about this episode can be sent to podcast@fairlds.org or join the conversation at fairblog.org. Tell your friends about us and help increase the popularity of this podcast by subscribing in iTunes and by writing a review. Music for this episode was provided courtesy of Paul Cardall. The opinions expressed in this podcast are not necessarily the views of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints or of FAIR.